Hello, friends. Welcome to Sunflower Club, a podcast about the healing power of creativity. I am your host, James McCray. Today's guest is my friend, Corey Allen. Corey is a writer, author, musician, and meditation teacher who applies the principles of mindfulness to modern life. In this episode, Corey and I discuss our personal creative practices, including our process for writing both books and social media content, and how developing a mindfulness practice can jumpstart your creativity. Ladies and gentlemen, here is Corey Allen. All right, Corey Allen, welcome back to the podcast, my friend. We've had a few.
Thanks, man.
We've had more, offline conversations over the past year over cigars and cocktails. it's always great to go back on the record with you and chat this way.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, can you imagine that we had conversations that weren't recorded?
Yeah, that's ridiculous. Who would do such a thing?
I know. We didn't monetize our conversations. I mean, man. No, but it's great to be here with you, man.
It's just prep work for this one.
Yeah, that's right. Let's see if it pays off or not.
So, what is most exciting in your life at the moment?
Oh man, I mean, I think just being alive has been really exciting to me. I've oddly over the last couple of months, I've just felt more sentimental than I ever have. I think I'm just not a sentimental person at all. I'm very much like whenever I used to clean out, like if I would move places or something like that, I would always just picture. I would imagine that I was cleaning out the house of a dead guy. And so like a dead stranger. And so I would just like throw everything away that wasn't like functional or useful in some way.
Yes.
So going from that mindset to feeling more sentimental. Yeah. I've definitely just, I think I just really been feeling a lot of like a different type of gratitude, you know, and appreciation for just being, but also like everything in my life and the people in it. And it's just, I feel just really, really like, it's like there's a sweetness that's kind of coming to, you know, how I feel about things, where it's like a sweetness in the sense of not me being sweet. I mean, let's be absolutely clear on that. I mean, a sweetness to like, just like how precious everything feels and how grateful I am for it.
First of all, that's beautiful. How much of that do you think is related to getting a puppy?
Zero. Negative. Negative 100%.
Really?
Yeah.
I think puppies, like, I mean, when I got my puppies, they definitely softened me up a little bit.
Yeah, no, I'm just joking, like, because there's also a lot of work and, you know, headache and stuff. I mean, I don't think that has much to do with it. I think that, I mean, puppies, pets are always great, you know, because the thing I find interesting about them is that they bring out this quality that is not brought out of, at least me, anywhere else. Like, so if I'm in my house alone all day, which is usually the case, there will never be a moment which I'll be like, hey, buddy, what's going on? How you doing? Like that, it's kind of like little warm, squiggly, sort of childlike feeling does not exist in me. But if there's a puppy there, then, you know, you see them and it evokes that feeling. So it's, they're a great, you know, mechanism in that regard to like bring out that part of yourself.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. I wanted to talk about both your voice and your energy to start this off, because I feel like you have a great podcaster voice and you have a very calm voice and a calm presence. So I'm wondering how much of that is reflective of how you feel on the inside, first of all.
Yeah.
And is that something that you've cultivated over the years through having like a mindfulness and meditation practice?
Yeah. I mean, it is a reflection of how I feel on the inside. It actually, what's funny is that I think I may be more calm on the inside than I actually even seem on the outside. Because sometimes, like, whenever I see a video of myself or hear myself talking or something, I'm like, man, I sound like really animated. Like, I sound way more animated than I feel. So basically, I'm dead inside. No. That's how I feel. And then I think, you know, I've always been just kind of cool, like as far as the tempo goes, like even keel. But certainly it's, you know, 25 years of meditation and consciousness exploration and actively working to, you know, be more present and non-attached to the present moment has, I think, contributed to that sense of calmness. Because like at the end of the day, peace is an understanding, right? Peacefulness is understanding the context of your own existence. It's understanding then and accepting what is without trying to grasp or change it in any way. And it takes a long time, like, and there's levels of like integration of just like of how things are, right? And that doesn't mean that you can't influence those things through your actions. That's very true. But just our pure, like, existential state of being is, if you release yourself to it, if you really and accept it for what it is, not how you want it to be, then all of that tension and all of that grasping and the conflict between the story in your mind of the expectations that you have about how reality should be versus the actual unshiftable existential truth of what is, that conflict goes away, because then you're just basically playing with what's happening as opposed to trying to litigate your story against what's actually happening. And that relieves a lot of tension and a lot of conflict, and I think it contributes to a lot of peacefulness.
Absolutely. I love that. Yeah, I once heard mental health described as accepting reality on reality's terms.
Yeah, that's good.
I think so much of what throws us off and disrupts us in life is wanting things to be different than they are. And I think you do need to accept things in order to kind of get to where we want things to be. There's kind of, it's kind of a paradox where by letting go of the striving and by like sinking into the experience, that actually opens things up for us in a way. And I often think of like life like a movie. Like when you watch a movie, you might wish things happened differently in the movie, but it's all part of the experience of the drama that's unfolding. And even the negative things that happen, like my house was just broken into, you know, a few weeks ago, like I was telling you, and, you know, I had a friend pass away.
Yeah.
Recently.
Sorry about that. I didn't.
Yeah, no, it's all good. You know, we're definitely, it actually helped us to, just have a higher degree of boundaries over our home and just how we set up security and things. So I think, and it was mostly like actually in the garage, they took some things from the garage. So the, like the best thing we lost was a bike, which is unfortunate, but even when these things happen, it's like, what is the lesson here? Like, what is the contrast that's going to actually kind of propel you forward through this and not wishing it didn't happen, but appreciating the growth that comes from these types of lessons from, you know, the less fortunate elements of life instead of trying to completely resist them or bypass them.
No, yeah, totally. I mean, it's all,
yeah. Sorry,
I was just going to say it's all about how you. I think we're on a delay here. Go ahead.
No, I was just wondering if you had any specific practices to help keep you grounded. I know you've been invested in mindfulness and meditation for a long time. What are some of the practices that you've developed, or just ways of living that you've developed to cultivate a presence and peace of mind?
Well, I mean, meditation, of course, is a big one. But I think that your perspective is really everything, like in terms of what you were just talking about with your house being broken into. And sorry about that. I just couldn't resist myself. I had to get into your garage that night. It's how you deal with whatever the thing is, right? It's like, because there's a level of needless suffering that we experience because we get attached to this idea that like things will always be okay, right? And that's just not true. Because life doesn't work that way. There are like ups, there are downs, there's ups, there's downs. Things are great, then things suck, and then things are great, and then things suck. It's just kind of the push and pull and the tension of being, right? But it's really about how you engage with each of those moments, as you're talking about, that I think really makes your overall global experience of life what it is. You know, so in terms of whenever something unfavorable happens, like your house gets broken into, you can, as you said, be pulled into the drama of your mind and, you know, get crazy and whatever, or you can look at it and with a different perspective and be like, how can we, this sucks, but let's handle it. And then let's like kind of move forward thinking like, what can we make out of this? Insights can we take from this, or how can we, in your terms, like, how could you do something to make you feel more safe at home after something like that? You know, it's just all about how you kind of swing with whatever happens. As opposed to resisting, like holding on to a level of internal conflict out of worry and resistance that things will be bad at some point, because they simply will. And the more that you mentally are aware of that, then when something does happen that you're not expecting, the less of a catastrophic thing it is.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. So I'm always curious about, just people's journeys that lead them to where they are. And like you're finishing up your mm-hmm. second book. You have a popular podcast, a popular Instagram page, and you said you've been meditating now for over 20 years. Mm-hmm. How did you discover this path that you're on now? Like when you were younger. Like, what were the key steps that brought you to where you are today?
Yeah, I mean, the steps, I guess if we put it in terms of sort of like the entry point, like how was I forced into it? Let's put it in that way. Just my background as far as like as a teenager, the situation I was in, I was very... I felt a difficult time integrating into life, like on an existential level. I felt alienated. And I think I think a lot of people feel that way at that age. But also my environment made it to where I wasn't able to emotionally express myself. I wasn't able to talk about anything real, anything difficult. And there was a lot of emotional manipulation, a lot of gaslighting, a lot of just a negative and abusive emotional environment. And so because of that, and also I was just like left alone for like extended periods of time. So because of that, I was very at a lot of anger, a lot of intense anxiety, because I was always worried about, like being attacked essentially. And then I had no guidance from anyone either, because I was taught it's not okay to ask, these questions, or else you're doing something wrong if you ask a difficult question, because it makes the person being asked freak out because they're not capable of accessing their own, emotional spectrum and responding. So then the way to deal with that is to make it like turn it into an anger situation. So because of all of that, I basically just began like seeking ways to try and feel calm, you know, try and like just get out of this horrible like anxiety and tension and stuff that I was feeling. And I really just stumbled upon, like, at a young age, just by pure random chance. I mean, some people could paint it as divine timing or something like that. I really just stumbled upon like Western and Eastern philosophy at a young age. And this is in the 90s, you know, so there was no Google, there was no YouTube, there were no meditation courses. It was like find an old book and like read it. And in that time, the formatting was not, here are 10 steps to meditation. Here's like 400 pages of like badly translated meandering about stuff or whatever, essays on, you know, various topics.
What were some of those first books, what were those like initial like entry points into that?
Yeah, one that always comes to mind that I got really early on was Essays in Zen Buddhism by D.D. Suzuki. That was a great one. And you know, like the Tibetan Book of Living and Dying, not the Tibetan Book of the Dead, but the Tibetan Book of Living and Dying. And just things like that. And then I was also reading like a lot of Husserl. I don't know if you're familiar with Edmund Husserl,
the
Western philosopher. Mm. He was like a phenomenologist. And so at the same time, there was a lot of like, he has a great quote that's like, all perception is a gamble, you know, like your whole reality is a gamble, essentially. So reading a lot of like phenomenology, and then also like the existentialists, and then the Eastern philosophy at the same time, I began to become, I came online, as you know, consciousness wise, became more self-aware. And as I started just trying to like mimic these practices and these mindsets I was reading about in these books, I slowly cultivated a bit of mental space. And so I started seeing my thoughts and my impulses and my intentions on the stage of my mind in real time as I was experiencing life. And the more I practiced, the more that zoomed back to where I got a greater view, a deeper view into those things. And then I realized that by being able to watch your mind in that way, that you then can have control over what you're saying, what you're doing, how you execute your thoughts and turn them into actions and therefore create who you are. And I just began working with that. And the more I worked with that, the more I felt, you know, in charge, the more I felt like I had say in who I was and like what I was feeling. And so instead of like being really aggressive and like condescending to people and then later feeling like bad about it or like post-event process and being like, oh, I was such an asshole last night, I then in the moment could see those things arising and like let them go, as opposed to just sort of, you know, having to deal with it later. And then I started contrasting like how I felt at one point, and I would say like 3 months later or something, I would take like a mental snapshot and be like, okay, like my mind, just the texture of my mind is so different than it was 3 months ago. Like I feel so much more calm and clear and precise, and like my mindfulness was so much sturdier, you know, at that time. And then more months would go by and I'd see the difference again. I'd be like, wow, I just noticed my consciousness evolving and shifting. And really that process has just never stopped. Like I still do that today. But that's kind of just how I got into it and just continued to kind of autodidactically learn those things over time.
Yeah, that's so interesting. Like I always wonder, like you stumbled across books of, you know, about Buddhism and meditation and philosophy at a young age. I'm always curious about like why those books, like why did you find those books? Like, is that, if you had found other books, like would your life be completely different? Cause I know when I was a kid, like when I was a kid, like I found my mom had poetry books laying around the house, and like, she wasn't like a poet and she didn't like talk about poetry, but she had poetry books around the house and I found them. So I would just read them And then it didn't take long before I'm like, oh, I'm going to try writing my own poem. And I'm like 14. Mm. Right. And it's like, well, what if my mom had, what if my mom had Zen Buddhism books around the house? And then you discovered poetry books while in your journey. I just wonder how much, like how much of those discoveries are like preordained because that's like the path that we're on versus I just happened to find poetry and you happen to find Buddhism. I just find that fascinating to think about. It's like the different paths that we could took and how much of it is destined versus chance.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think about that too. And I think about it in those times, like what if I would have found books on like investment and like hedge fund trading and stuff. And I, you know, all my energy and focus went into that, you know, I mean, it's quite possible. I do think that just from, you know, I think there's some of it's random chance. I think that also there is a certain, we're all kind of have a certain predilection for ways of seeing the world and certain shapes of thought that are meaningful to us in the way that we understand things. And I think that our minds work as have kind of a filtration system, and we are blind to, or rather like ignore things that don't speak to us in terms of how we see the world. And whenever we come across things that do, they become very important. So for instance, there could have been a bunch of Buddhism books around your house, and you may not have even really taken note of them because poetry is how, is what, you know, makes sense to you, you know?
Absolutely.
But also who knows, maybe it was, maybe it's some, I mean, I do kind of just, this is sort of a longer conversation, but in short, I get the sense that like the point of being is to just kind of perfect the mathematic equation of the cosmos. And maybe those are like addition and multiplication signs that appear for us along the way, you know?
Yeah. Or it's like, you know, there's, we're surrounded by information at all times. And we could choose to focus on any of it. Like I'm in my office right now. I can see the trees outside. But I could also focus, I could focus my energy on the art that I have in my room. And it's like the experiencing reality is very much a process of filtering where our attention goes. And like whatever resonates with, we give that our attention. And in doing so, we bring it to life for us. So like we're always have every option kind of at our disposal in terms of what we're focusing on, right? But you know, where we choose to focus our attention is really what comes to life. And I want to talk a little bit about the relationship between mindfulness and creativity, because you know, if mindfulness is really a process of paying attention to our thoughts. And I believe that creativity is similar. I think there's a big overlap. In fact, you know, one of my favorite writers, as you know, is Allen Ginsberg. And I was reading some of his interviews recently. And he was describing his process for writing poetry. And he just, someone asked him, do you edit your poems? And he said, or do you polish your poems? They asked. After you write them, do you polish them? And he said, no, I really try not to. But what I do is I polish my mind before I write them. And for him, the act of writing poetry was like almost a direct dictation of his consciousness. So his poetry was actually the process of being more aware of his thoughts in the moment and then recording them with minimal interference. So I'm just wondering, does that resonate for you? And like, what do you see as the relationship between creativity and mindfulness?
Yeah, well, I've always loved the sort of a choking trope of Allen Ginsberg, the collaboration, I think. But the first thought, best thought thing is nice, you know, in creativity. It doesn't always hold true, but in terms of what Ginsberg was just talking about, you were just paraphrasing, then it's certainly true. Yeah, no, I very much have that relationship working together in my creative practice, you know, like in writing. This is, you know, hopefully this will be clear. Like, so essentially I will have a general idea of what it is that I want to be writing about. And then I really just get out of the way of it, like mentally, and start to watch like what arises. And typically what happens is that there are three or four, five different stems of idea that arise, and they'll start connecting with each other, and they formulate like a conceptual thing that starts turning into an unfolding as what would be almost like spoken language in my mind. And so I'm basically like dictating what's happening in that process through typing. And I notice, and so then my job becomes to just steady that process. And then my intellect is making decisions as kind of that river is flowing of which, what is the best, most logical pathway to guide it in? And pick, I have to quickly choose sort of which road to go down. And I just sit in that state and get completely out of the way. I just dictate it and go and go and go. And what's interesting is that the energy of that, just like river, it gets more and more intense. And so it gets more almost like manic, where it starts speeding up and getting faster to where I'm like writing so fast that it's just like, you know, like I've written like 8,000 words in a day before, whenever it's been like really intense. And yeah, but typically I'll cut it off at about 2,000 or 2,500 because I want to always be in peak energy mode. But some days, whenever it's just, you know, really coming, then I just don't even stop. But yeah, I think that that's kind of the way I work with it. And I think it's important generally for writers to write how they talk. And so what's happened, because you really capture the essence of an individual that way, and you really can convey something to a reader in a way that feels very natural. Because sometimes, you know, people may not have thought about this, they don't think deeply about the mechanics of writing, but if sometimes you read something and there's all of this, like it just feels like resistance, like you're having to push through it as you're reading it. And then there's like this kind of stop and start traffic kind of feeling. That is a writer who is slowly hacking together one thing after the next. They're not in the flow. They're like stopping to do research and then adding a sentence and then thinking about it and adding a sentence. They're not in alignment with themselves. Whenever what I look for and what I try to create and what I find is good writing is when writing has a suction to it. When if you're reading something and it's literally pulling you forward into the next thing as you read along, that's good writing because, of course, you know, it's pleasurable to read and there's an ease to it wherever you read it and it's actually drawing you into it and forward. But also the actual content of it is so fluid. That's the reason it has that effect. It's because the writing itself and the ideas are so fluid and succinct that it's easy to get into the flow of the ideas and then be pulled forward. And I really believe, at least in my experience, the way to achieve that is from what I found is the state I described of getting into that zone, like you said, Allen Ginsberg does, and just like dictating your own consciousness essentially and acting as kind of a midwife for your own, the connection of your subconscious and conscious mind.
Yeah, absolutely. I love what you said about writing how you speak, because I've really learned to edit less, but to be more true to the thought as it's arising, because a thought arises in a kind of natural way. It's kind of spontaneous and organic. And I think as the writer's job is just to capture it and to record it. Too much interference after that is kind of more like getting the ego involved, or it's like, let's change this way. And you almost start to over-engineer it. Not to say I don't edit. Like I think, you know, a little bit of editing is good, but being true to the sequence of words as they arise in your thoughts, it for me, it tends to be a little more natural. It is sounding, or even like true to me. So for you, does that look like, Do you like actually go into a state of meditation before writing? Like, for example, like your Instagram posts. So you've you're pretty consistent writer on Instagram, and you've gained quite a large following around your quotes. You have a very consistent kind of style of kind of pithy, thoughtful quotes and reflections. Are these things that, do you get ideas kind of throughout the day while you're, you know, doing the laundry and running errands? Or is it more like, I'm going to consciously sit down and go into a state of meditation and intentionally create social media content?
Yeah. So, what's funny is whenever I'm doing the laundry, I'm not thinking anything. Whenever I'm, you know, doing that type of stuff, I really just am like, I'm just there with the thing, and I'm not, there's not like a script in the background.
Well, sure, but do you ever, but like, do spontaneous things ever come through when you're not expecting them to?
Not as much as they used to. Yeah, it's interesting. Is I think that I really think about nothing so much that that doesn't lend itself to that happening. But what I do is that, I can just turn it on and turn it off. That's the difference. Is like, in the past, I would wait around and try and hope that I would have some idea that settled into my mind. And I'd be like, yes, like while you're in the shower or something, you have some idea and you're like, oh man, I'm gonna get the soap and write that down on the wall, you know? And, cause I use black soap. it's like, actually, never mind. I used to like hope for that, where it was like, man, there'll be this, you know, special butterfly that comes flying through and you got to catch it with the net and write it down. But now I have it under control to where I sit down and just like turn the switch on. And I go, okay, I'm going to write 5 of these things. And I sit down and I write them. It takes me half an hour. And then that's it. I turn it off and I go back to kind of not thinking again. And so it's like I choose whenever I want to turn on that brain, that creative thing. It's like a kind of like a faucet, really. It's like you just turn the faucet on, it's dripping, turn it off and keep going.
Okay, that's awesome. But like, how does, like, so let's break down how that operates. Like, how does that faucet turn on? Because I know what you're saying. And for me, like, what it is it's almost like I'm trying to tune into, it's like, it's hard to describe it without sounding like getting into mystical terminology for me. Because it, when I sit down to write, I'm almost like expanding my consciousness into a wider informational stream that's in the universe. Like, I feel like I'm tapping into, I sometimes feel like it's the collective unconscious or just like the collective energy field. Sometimes I feel like, you know, the idea of the muse resonates, where I'm tapping into really an intelligence that is in another dimension, like whatever that is, like whether that's an actual being or my higher self or, you know, whatever it is, but I'm actually receiving information from beyond my conscious mind. I'm trying to get into a state of receptivity where I'm open to receiving. So for you, does it feel like that, or how does, when you turn the faucet on, what are you doing to turn it on? And like, if your default mode is to not think anything, which is awesome, and like it sounds like a peaceful kind of void to live in, but if that's the default mode, like where does the content come from? Are you, like, even the topics themselves, like when you turn the faucet on, where do these topics come that even leads to the sequence of words that you end up writing? Are you starting with emotions? Yeah. Are you asking a question, or like what's the prompt to turn that faucet on?
So, well, I also, just as terms of like what you're describing your process like, is I experience that too, but I look at it differently. Like you mentioned sort of tuning into a larger frequency, almost a collective consciousness. I look at it as that frequency, that's just always there. We're always in that. The problem is that it's shaved down by our distraction, right? And so whenever you were to sit down to write and go, okay, let's really focus and be present on this, the distraction goes away, your view expands, and then you can once again return and remember that big frequency that you've been in all along. Like, that's how I look at it. I also think that, I mean, this is just pure like philosophical chewing gum, but I tend to err on the side as opposed to collective consciousness. I think it's the membrane between our subconscious and our conscious minds can be made more opaque. And that means that basically like our whole act of human existence is it's a brain trying to get itself to realize things. That's all we are. It's like the brain, the subconscious is trying to get the conscious to recognize things so they can integrate it and process it and let it go. And that's just what happens over and over and over again. So if you can help it out a little bit, be a little proactive and help it out, you can get this connection going between the fragmental part of your consciousness and your aware mind that puts direction and form on things. And you can really just start cooking because you've got them working together and you get like rapid integration. So that's kind of the way I look at it in as far as thinking and as far as writing goes. Now in terms of the faucet, turning the faucet on, I look to, like, I pay attention to what's happening, like in the culture, right? Like the culture of what, you know, the environments that you and I are in, like where our work is. I pay attention to that. I pay attention to how people respond to like the work that I put out into the world. I pay attention to what other people are doing. And through that, I surmise the general tone of what we as like a collective people are looking for. Like what challenge, there's waves of, you could even call them trends. Sometimes I call them, disrespectfully, I call them like fashion, you know. There's almost like self-development fashion out there.
Yeah, it's the energy that's moving through the culture at any given time. Like what is the message that's kind of going through the culture? What are people interested in hearing about? What are the things that people need in this moment that's kind of you're tapping into the nervous system of the, you know, the collective in a way.
Totally. So I do that. I pay attention to what that is, but then I think how can I walk this out into the future? Because everything is cause and effect. Everything is like there will just, even on a fundamental human psychological level, if you experience this, typically, you're going to walk into experiencing this thing next because you had the previous experience will lead you there. And so I think about like, where is culture at and what will it need in about 2 weeks? You know? And so then I look at what my experience personally has been and what's something that could be useful at that time so that as the thing I create circulates, then the wave and it will meet on time and it will be meaningful.
Mm. Yeah, that resonates for sure. And for me, I don't know if this resonates with you. For me, I tend to look at it right now. Like I start with my emotion and my body. Like I'm not a super emotional person, but and I'm not even super connected to my
which
body.
We've disagreed on this, remember? Remember, we've had disagreements on this before.
Oh, probably. But I feel like, and I'm not even super connected to my body, but I'm learning to be more so, right? Because what I've realized is if I start with my mind, the mind, like the conscious mind can only go so deep. It can only penetrate to that collective, and it can only like read the field so deeply. But what I do is I start with my emotions, kind of like what am I feeling? And it's kind of like what you said. It's kind of like what are the trends going through society? What are the topics that people are interested in? What is the message that people need to hear? Right? Like if there was a disaster or a shooting or something, and that everyone on social media is talking about, you know, that requires a different response and a different message than if there wasn't. Right? People are maybe in a more sensitive place. They're going to be a little bit more. There might be a little more sorrow in the world, and it's good to be aware of that. And you know, I feel like the world has had a lot of sorrow in recent years, and it's required a lot of, you know, a delicate touch for creators and for writers. But for me, yeah, one way is to kind of look at the trends and see what's going on and see what messages are being shared and what's resonating with people. But even better for me is to just tune into my own body and see how am I feeling? Like, what do I need? What is the message that I need at this moment? And then I tend to recognize that the message that I need or whatever is coming through for me tends to resonate with others as well, because it's not coming from my localized conscious mind. It's coming from somewhere in the physical, energetic, emotional level, which I think is... I've come to realize that is where we're all connected. So by tapping into my own emotions, I'm tapping into the emotions of the collective.
Yeah, no, that makes total sense.
And do you ever worry that you're going to run out of ideas? Because I feel like I used to, like I used to worry about that, like quite a bit, like, oh, those are my last good ideas. And you know, because I mean, there are certain days that are more productive than others, right? So, but with what we're describing, this creative process, I feel like there's a never ending supply of source material, because the world that we're living in is always changing. It's kind of like speaking of Buddhism, it's kind of like there's like a Zen saying that you can never step in the same river twice. Because every time you go back to that river, the water is completely different, and also you're different. So every time you step in the river, it's a unique experience that can never be fully replicated, because those drops of water are already far down the river next time you return. So it's kind of like that, where it's like the world is always changing, the collective mood is always changing. We're always changing. So when you just show up to essentially, you know, dictate and transcribe how you feel or what's happening, the situation is always adapting. So you're always kind of responding to new situations. So just by being present, just by being present and being aware, the information that we're tapping into is always being renewed. So we can always pull from a fresh, you know, spring of ideas and creativity.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I feel that way too. Yeah, I mean, the only breakdown would be the breakdown of your relationship with yourself that would prevent new ideas. I mean, and it would take, I think, for you, or just speaking in terms of you and I mean, a catastrophic events to make that happen, and it wouldn't be permanent, you know. But yeah, no, it's like I look at newness with excitement, because I'm always working to improve myself as a person and as a creator, as a writer, as a thinker. And so I am excited to get to how I'm going to think 5 years from now, because I always feel like I'm just starting, you know, and I always am like, okay, I'm finally getting it. And then a year later, I'm like, okay, now I'm finally getting it. And it just never stops, you know? So I'm just always looking forward to it. And, I don't know. I think I do know people who are worried about like ideas, but I think it's just, once you position your relationship with yourself properly, then it just, you know, it's like, it's sort of whenever, I don't know if you've ever done a podcast with someone or you're going to do one, and they're like, well, what are we going to talk about before we get going? And I'm like, I don't know. We could just start talking. It'll be fine. And they're like, no, I can't do that. It's terrifying. And it's like, well, do you go to lunch with a friend? And you like text them beforehand, like, okay, what are we going to talk about at lunch? It's like, I need to be, it's like, no, you just show up and it just happens. But you just have to get the context out of your mind and it's fine.
Totally. It's like, it's weird. Like the more present you are and just the more aware you are and the more calm you are, just the more open those floodgates become for spontaneity and for, you know, things to arise in the moment without a kind of a pre-planned. Yeah. It's like, I mean, I know we're both big fans of jazz music, and just the more that I create and the more that I live and think about things, the more I realize that everything is improvisation. You know, all art, all creativity is improvisation, because even if, you know, even if you're writing a book, like, okay, you're writing a book. Well, that doesn't happen. That's not an improv, but it is, because every sentence is an improvisation in the moment.
Yeah, like, no, it's not definitely an improv.
There's not an audience to watch every sentence appear, but the way that it comes through is one spontaneous, like insight at a time. So it's like a drawn out improvisation, but that's how it happens. Like that, and just that's, for me, like, and that's not always easy, right? Especially when you're in public and speaking in front of a crowd or doing things where, you know, it's being recorded. It can be scary sometimes, but I'm realizing like how big of a hack that is for artists of all kinds, is to be comfortable with the improvisational aspects of life and creativity and letting things happen as they may. And if something looks like a mistake, like, I love what Miles Davis said. He's like, there's no wrong note. It all depends on the note you play next. So maybe you did like a wrong note, but that becomes a right note if you follow that up with, you know, something new next in the sequence that follows along that same logic.
So, yeah. And the important part of, in terms of Miles, is not judging that wrong note as wrong. You know,
exactly, flowing.
It's just, it's not wrong. It was just unexpected. And unexpected is good. Growth lives in the unknown, man. You know, you have to go, like what is comfortable will never be exciting, right? Like the space of comfort will never push you to become greater.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. This is really like tying back to even my house getting broken into, right? Because, as we were saying before, like that's a wrong note in a way, right? Like that's a note that I did not want. I did not want the universe to play that note, right? But in a way, when you flow with it, so shortly after our house getting broken into, because I think that disrupted our lives in a way, and kind of like just threw us off and kind of shook us up a bit. And then it was shortly after that that me and my fiance were kind of offered this wedding at this really cool like pyramid in the woods outside of Austin. And there's no way to directly connect those two things, but I feel like without the break-in and without our lives being disrupted in such a strange way, that I feel like the wedding came out of that same energy, where it's suddenly we have a month to get married, and we're like, we had to take that chaotic energy and that disruption and then channel it into a positive direction, which is having a month to plan a wedding. So I feel like that, like there's something about that where it's like, that's the wrong note to play, but then we resolved that wrong note by turning it into this spontaneous wedding that we're having. So I feel like there is like a connection between those. If you look at life like a jazz solo, it's like every note you follow it with another note, the composition is in the totality of all of that, and you need the contrast of experience to make life worthwhile. So it applies to writing, and it also applies to life.
Yeah, and it's beautiful in terms of like that the break-in inevitably made you two closer too, because you're facing a challenging situation together, and so you bond more through that. And then it's like a pre-bond for the mega bond of the wedding.
Absolutely. No, it definitely feels that way. But speaking of writing books, so we're both kind of coming out of a long process of writing a new books, and it's too early to start promoting either of our books. But I'm wondering if, without giving too much away, what is this next book about?
Oh yeah, it's a lot of motivation and inspiration in there, but essentially it's kind of like a way forward through learning and releasing the negative thinking habits that keep a person in a place of drifting and limiting their own belief in themselves, and being able to begin to work with the mind to let go of those things, to cultivate a sense of hunger for more things that are possible, for more potential, to build a trust with yourself so that you can start taking charge and navigating your life in a direction systematically, like with intention of where you want it to go. And then also then learning how to consistently redefine yourself and who you are, you know, along that process. And ultimately it lands with showing a person, you know, the strength of being able to go through these motions to where you build that sense of self-knowing, of self-awareness and self-trust, to where that you can then kind of be unstoppable by facing the future, because you are prepared in the present to deal with anything that arises while constantly guiding your life and the intentional space and place that you want it to go.
Beautiful. It sounds kind of like the intersection of, you know, mindfulness, but also, you know, motivation, and actually applying mindfulness into like real world applications.
Exactly. Cool. Yeah, exactly. And we talked about this before. Like, there's a big part of my personality that is very much like, I like to, well, I guess I don't like to, I just do it. Like, I try and really amp my friends up or people I talk to that are talking about things they want to do. And I really like wanted to put that into the book too, because I want someone to read that and to feel like inspired and pumped up and ready to be able to, you know, go do what they want to do.
Beautiful. So what was your writing process like for the book? How was writing a book different than writing Instagram content, for example? Do you have the same process, or how does it look different?
It's different. I mean, you know, it's interesting. The first book I wrote, I was just kind of learning what that world was like. But it's been years since then, and so this was very different. But then I wrote so much in between then that it was a whole different feeling going into it. So it was kind of like I had to reestablish a long form tone again, because I had been just writing so much for Instagram for so long. So it was like, okay, that's like a very clear and concise voice that is natural and like what I like it to be as far as like the Instagram writing. But turning that into paragraphs is a bit of a different energy than just three sentences or something like that. And so, it took a minute of just finding and establishing that tone. But then once I had the voice that I wanted, then it was just like, you know, it was home free, you know.
How much do you start with? Because with books, I always think about kind of starting with the macro versus the micro. Like, you can write a book where you really just start by writing, and seeing what comes out, like, and where does the writing take you? Or do you start more at the macro, where you think about the outline, think about the kind of book in its totality, and kind of have that mapped out before zooming into some of the details?
Yeah, because of my process that I described earlier of just sort of letting the, you know, the unfiltered consciousness arise and then dictating that, it's important for me to have a linear structure. Otherwise, the premise would be lost, probably, of the book. So I create a really airtight and thoughtful structure of, one, of course, what's the premise of the book, but then what are the chapters, and often case, what are the subchapters within those? And I make sure that that all linearly makes sense, because I think about it in terms of, like, it's like composing music. You know, it needs to, there needs to be a beginning to establish, you know, the general ideas of the book. And it needs to, as it takes the reader somewhere, it needs to be a linear progression that then resolves into a purposeful place at the end. And so I make sure that that structure's there, and then go in and just kind of fill it in as I'm going. But I did something this time that was, that I didn't do the first time, but that was cool. And that is, well, it's cool to me, is that I wrote the first chapter last, because I always find that over the course of writing a book, you know, for people who haven't done it, like, it kind of, like, it takes months, you know, sometimes 3, 4, 5, 6 months, maybe a year, depending on who you are and how things are going. And over that time, the voice and the tone of the writing evolves, becomes a bit more, it takes on its own sort of life in this way. And I pay very close attention to tone in writing and in music, you know, but in writing. And so knowing that the end of a book is going to have a lot more, even if only I can notice it, the tone is going to be extremely established. And it's going to be really, really, like, just coming out so natural, because you've been in that zone for 4 months. Your mind is just in that. All the neuroplasticity is pointing towards writing. You're just in that frequency. As opposed to the beginning, you were arising into that space, right? And so that lifting off feeling is good for the beginning of a book, because the reader is also getting comfortable with the kind of the arising feeling of the book. You're taking off, the plane is taking off. But this time what I did is, because the first chapter of a book is so important, it's like, you know, someone reads the first paragraph, and if it doesn't hit them, then they're not going to continue on, and why should they? Like, I wrote the last, or the first chapter last, so that the energy of the end of the book would be like peak energy would be how the book started. So that way it just slips right into the voice, into the vibe. And then, you know, then once you start chapter two, mentally a reader is like taking a breath, taking a beat to be, okay, let's begin, because like chapter one is sort of an introductory chapter. So they're already mentally aligned with that feeling of kind of things lifting off. So that was a cool thing I did this time.
Totally. I love that. Yeah. It reminds me of when I'm working on a book outline and like the order of chapters, and as a musician, I'm sure you'll relate to this, but I always think about like the track list on albums, and like, it's so crucial. Totally. The right tracking, meaning the order of the songs, is so important. Like, there are some songs that are just great opening tracks. And then you want to like, you want to like introduce maybe the single at the third or the fourth track. And then a lot of albums start off with like 3 or 4 great songs, and then there's a bunch of filler at the end. And I love the albums that the real hidden gems maybe like pop up in like track 9 or track 10, and it's like a really solid body of work, and like all the songs work together. I always think of my books and my like the outline and the order of the chapters like that, where it's like, how can I bring readers on a journey in the same way that like I might feel when I'm listening to a great album, and like getting those emotional waves and like guiding people along in the right way, and when to surprise them, and when to, you know, when to do something different, when to mix it up.
So music, yeah, absolutely.
I always think about it in terms of music. Do you ever do any rearranging of your chapters, or like once you have the outline at the beginning, is that pretty much set, or does a lot of changing and rewriting and reworking happen along the way?
It's relatively set, but in this instance, I did scooch a few things around that just made more sense as far as like, you know, initially the outline, it made sense to have things in that progression, but then like in the first section, which is all about, you know, mental thinking habits and so forth, like revisiting it, I was like, you know what, this actually, after it's written, this makes sense to start with as opposed to this other thing. So it was just kind of a little bit of reorganization like that, but not too big. How about you? What do you mix things around?
Oh gosh. I think I do. You know, my last book, there was, you know, I think I kept most of what I wrote. But I think I would change more things within a chapter. I think my chapter organization was pretty much set, but within a chapter, I might move things around. And, you know, sometimes I would move certain stories from one chapter to another, just depending on, you know, like I said, that overall flow or like where things make the most sense. So I definitely like keep my outlines as a work in progress, and let it unfold, but without probably changing too much from like that initial structure.
Nice. Yeah. This book for me felt like, it's like you're standing on the beach, and ironically, I actually wrote about something like this in there, but also it's like, it feels like you're standing on the beach and like, you're just walking out into the ocean like the entire time. Cause it starts off really practical and whatever. And it just gets like deeper and deeper and deeper and addresses like even big topics like happiness and like meaning and purpose and things like that. And so it feels good to, and even it's cool. It was like, I really gave myself a lot of liberty to like dip into my own just philosophical thoughts that I don't really share that often. In, you know, just even, I don't know if, have I ever talked to you about my idea of what I call portals before?
Remind me.
It's like whenever there are certain things in your life that are meaningful to you, but they're not, you haven't thought to really connect them. Mm. And then something happens to where it presents an opportunity to where you can connect those things and within yourself, right? And you see like the portal, this opportunity that you can walk through it or not. And if you do, it typically is a really seismic change in your progress because it unifies these elements of self. I find that every one of my like professional benchmarks has been one of those situations. So I gave myself some space, like talk about things like that in there too, and tell people how to watch for them in their own lives. You know, it's cool to get a bit. Get a bit more experimental.
Yeah, that's cool. How does one watch for a portal? Like, is it kind of like, it sounds like a little bit of a synthesis where you're connecting two dots in your life and then finding some kind of a higher truth by connecting those dots? Or how does one look for a portal in their own lives?
Yeah, no, that's exactly. So you're basically, we notice these things, right? These little gleams that appear for us, where they seem like these invitations, and it can be in a whole variety of different things, and they feel even a bit magnetic, right? But the challenge is that they call for us to do something we're not used to doing. They call for us to apply our specialty or our wisdom or our experience in a new way. And you can either say, yes, I will allow not my expectation of how I want things to unfold to keep me moving in this hardened path, or I'll stop, be present with it and go, you know what, actually, let me move into this thing. It wasn't what I was expecting, but it's got this sort of magic thing about it. And I feel like I'm the one that can service this because I have these skills that I haven't really considered using together before. And then, you know, taking that opportunity is then passing through that thing. And then every time that happens, like great things happen, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. That really resonates, you know, as someone who has changed careers multiple times and like everyone has been kind of, you know, it's whether I was an artist, as a young person, and then, I'm going to take these skills and apply them into becoming a professional graphic designer and then learning that whole world. And then you get comfortable in that world. Then it's like, well, this doesn't really feel right anymore. And then I'm kind of drawn towards pivoting into being a brand strategist, which is, it's related, but it's not. And then you take that jump. And then I get used to like, I'm helping clients with brand strategy. And then I'm And then I'm helping individuals with that. And then I'm applying my work in other ways. And then it's like different doors open, and then you have the opportunity to either jump through them or stay where you are. And I think it's so important to take those opportunities, to take that leap of faith into the unknown and accept that invitation. And I think that we're all given these invitations. And I think that the if we always say no to them and we never jump into the portal, I feel like that portal eventually starts drying up, or it's like, oh, that person's not interested in taking the leap. So we're going to, we're going to leave them alone in their comfortable known world. But the more that you accept those invitations and jump into the unknown, it's like those opportunities keep coming, because like you've already like said yes to that invitation, and then more will come along the way. And it's kind of like, how much do you want to say yes and how much do you want to say no? It's scary. It's very scary, but it's always been rewarding for me as well.
Yeah. But, and it's only scary the first time.
Right.
Because once you do it and then you're like, oh yeah, that worked out great. You know, it's like, this is way better than not, you know, having not done it. And then when another one appears and it's like, oh yeah, cool. I'm excited for it now because it was so good last time. And it just keeps, then it's not even a problem. Then it's just like an instinct to be like, all right, you know, let's go again. And yeah, you do seem, I think you're right in terms of like, if you reject them, then they stop appearing somewhat, because like, if you want to call it the universe or whatever, it's like, oh, this node of consciousness likes these things. So let's keep giving them to them so that they can keep passing through in the way they need to pass through, you know?
I think that's true with creativity too. And like, if there is such a thing as a muse, which whatever that is, I feel like the more... Well, I use the word muse as just placeholder, but the more you listen to that muse and like actually tune into that voice and create with it with consistency, the muse will keep showing up to the degree that you're dedicated to receiving. And it's like, if you can ignore that, that voice of the muse, and you can ignore that drive to create or that impulse or that intuition, and then that voice will dry up, because the muse wants to know that we are reliable keepers of her secrets. And when we prove ourselves worthy through our dedication and through our practice of showing up consistently, the more she will also show up, because you know we've proven that we are trustworthy for her to kind of share her secrets with.
Yeah, totally. And that's why it's so important to make yourself available. Like, if you are trying to do something creative, like, if you don't show up, there's no chance that magic is going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because maybe let's say that magic happens 1 out of 10 times or 1 out of 5 times or whatever. If you don't make yourself available for it to arise, then it never will. You know, and there's not only that, but then just in terms of discipline, it's so important. It's like, as far as writing goes, like I write, especially in terms of a book, it's like from, you know, 9 or 10 in the morning until 2 in the afternoon, 3 in the afternoon, 5 times a week, like no questions about it. Nothing else gets in the way. Like that's the primary thing that happens first. And I don't address anything else before that. And do that for whatever your creative pursuit is. Someone that's listening to this, if they're a musician, if they're an artist or whatever they're doing, a content creator, like spend, you know, and maybe you have a full-time job, that's fine, but wake up and spend an hour in the morning doing the thing 5 times a week. And then you like being consistent in that way, the amount of schooling that you'll give yourself is insane, because you're in there in the process doing the work on a daily basis, and it shifts the way that your mind works, and you get into this like self-discovery zone to where that becomes the familiar space, you know? And so then when you get in there, then things start changing and you can really start doing some work. And then if you look at the math of that, like that over time equals crazy compound interest, because if you do that for, you know, say someone's an aspiring whatever, and they spend, well, on the weekends, I put in a few hours, It's like, that's cool, but you have to understand that that's the results you're going to get, you know? But if you put in an hour every morning, then in, you know, 1 week, you've put in more work than you were already putting in months, you know, prior. And then if you look at, what if you do that for a year? Think about how much progress you're going to have, you know, and so on and so on. It just keeps magnifying. This is a really important part of it.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, I'm the same as you. Like, I block out every morning for my, you know, just my creative practice, you know, and if I'm working on a book, yeah, then that's when I work on the book. If I'm not, then it could be anything. It could be Instagram content. It could be a new class that I'm going to teach. It could be a new poem. Like, but I don't feel if I have obligations in the morning and I can't really dedicate myself to creativity, I really feel off. So I try not to schedule anything in the morning, like not until the afternoon, just to give myself that window. Because I think the dedication and the consistency is so important, because it's about building muscle memory. It's about if you're going to be Miles Davis and you're going to play a great trumpet solo on stage, that solo is only maybe a few minutes long, but it requires that muscle memory of playing every day, where it just becomes almost effortless, because it's so ingrained in your habitual, you know, just practice. And I wouldn't worry too much about how the quality of your output, especially if you're newer to a practice. Like, so I'm very dedicated to my writing practice. I also have a experience in the visual arts, and that's something I'm less dedicated to, especially drawing. Like, I used to draw all the time. I still love to draw, but I don't do it very much. So I wanted to start drawing again recently, and I just wasn't happy with what I was doing, or like the results, but it's because I haven't been in that practice. So what I started to do was just get back to the fundamentals. And like, I was just writing out the alphabet. And I was just like drawing different smiley faces, and I would just fill up a whole page with different expressions of a smiley face. And then I would write.
I love that. It's like, that could be.
Yeah.
I was going to say that could be taken various ways if someone were to stumble upon that. Like, yeah. Oh my God, this guy's got 30 pages of smiley faces.
It would look crazy, but like, that's the fundamentals, you know, like that's why, you know, that's why if you're a basketball player, you go out there and shoot layups in practice. It's like, I mean, if you're in the NBA, I hope you can make a layup, but at the same time, like you need to get that muscle memory down, where, you know, even if it's just practicing the fundamentals, you need to like master the fundamentals before you can be a crazy innovator. It's like before Pablo Picasso like created all of his abstract art and invented cubism and all of these things, he first mastered like traditional painting, and like, then you can kind of start to play around once you get more comfortable with the basics.
Totally. Yeah. I have a friend that's a great artist, and he's talked to me before about one of his practices is he just draws lines. Like, he just works on drawing straight lines every morning, which is like, it's kind of incredible, you know, just freehand straight lines.
I love that. Start with the basics. You don't have to go too crazy.
Yeah.
So I guess before we wrap up, I'm just wondering, is there any art that you've been digging lately? You know, whether that's a book or music, like what have there been any artists or art that have been really exciting for you lately?
Yeah. So, as far as books go, like has the Rick Rubin book, it seems. So, if you don't, I mean, I suggest it for a creative person. It's good. It's kind of timeless, and I think it'll serve people well until James's book comes out, and then you'll want to replace it with his, of course.
And then until yours comes out, and then you'll replace mine with yours.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. No, but two, that's one I'm enjoying. And then some things on deck as, I have the, I think it's called Art is Life. Jerry, we talked about that, right? the
Jerry Saltz
book. That guy.
Yeah, he's like an art critic,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I haven't dove into that one yet, but I've got that one on deck. And then I have a book called Death at Zero, or yeah, Death at Zero, I think is what it's called. It's like a kind of a new approach to like economics, where it's basically like use your resources during your life and then die at the end with nothing. and then I have Stephen Wright, the comedian from, you know, like the master of the one-liners from back in the 80s. He apparently wrote a novel. And so I've got that. That's coming out in a few weeks, but I've got that pre-ordered. So I just have some like random things on deck to read. But as far as things that are actually being read, I'm just still dipping into the Rubin right now.
How about music? Are you still like on the kind of minimal vibes or the hip hop vibes? What's been in your playlist lately?
Yeah. I mean, I always like to listen to minimal, you know, kind of stuff in hip hop. There's an album, a dude named Masego had put out a new album that's nice. It's sort of, have you ever heard that?
I'm not sure.
I bet you'd like it.
You'll have to send it to me.
It seems like it's probably up your alley. Yeah.
Cool.
And then there's a new Ali Farka Tour collection that came out. I've really been enjoying that. And then I busted out some Mulatu Asatke again. That's kind of been spinning as well. So that's kind of mainly been it. And then a little bit of the, I mean, I know it's funny. It's like I listen to Young Dolph all the time. I know I've told you this before, but I listen to him all the time. And so that's always showing up somewhere. I've listened to Smino as well. I don't know if you heard that guy.
Do you listen to music while you're writing, or like you probably don't? Can you listen to hip hop while you're writing, or is that more like ambient background minimal music that you play while you're writing?
No, I can. I do sometimes. Yeah, for sure. But I actually this book is for the book. Anyways, I wrote just in silence the entire time. Just total silence. But while I'm writing stuff for Instagram, like I always have music on. Yeah.
Interesting. What about like tea and coffee? Like, are you drinking coffee while you're writing, or like, what does that look like for you?
Yeah. Typically, like I like to do that for sure. I like to have coffee. Yeah.
Little stimulation.
Yeah. How about you?
Well, I start every morning with a big pot of yerba mate. And why I do that, like I love coffee, but I feel like when I start the day with tea, I have a longer runway for writing. Like if I start with coffee, I'll get like a big spike, and then I'll crash sooner. So I'll have a big pot of yerba mate, and I'll make it strong, and then later in the day, like early afternoon, I'll get some coffee, and that'll just helps me kind of coast for longer. It's like. It's a softer kind of like waking up of the mind than coffee. It's a little bit more like, oh.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I don't know. I like the intense transitions. They're fun.
Jump off the diving board.
Yeah. Like I wake up. And then within half an hour, I've like had a giant coffee and I'm like lifting weights in my gym. And so that happens like immediately. And then I'll like shower, meditate, and then start writing.
I like that.
I start the day with intense, a lot of coffee, extremely loud hip hop, and intense exercise. Get things going, you know?
Interesting. So this is why you're so calm, because you kind of like get it out of your system early on with some lift, you pump the coffee, pump the hip hop, lift some weights. And then you know, after that, it's just like, oh.
Yeah. No, it's a good way to just burn off all that animal anxiety. That's for sure.
I like it. All right, bro. Always great catching up with you. good to have you on the show. I'll have you back on when the book comes out. It's going to be what, like six months or so, I assume, if not longer.
Like a year.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, but we'll link your first book in the episode notes, as well as your Instagram and all that good stuff. So thanks again, bro. Nice to see you.
Thank you. Yeah. Good to see you too.